Les colloques du Collège de France.
So welcome everyone. As many of you know, the duty of professors at the Collège de France is to deliver every year a series of lectures, each time on a different topic. As part of my chair, Moral Questions and Moral Issues in Contemporary Societies, which has been published 3 months ago under the title Leçon de ténèbres, ce que la violence dit du monde, I dedicated this year's series to the theme Forms of Violence. Today's conference is the continuation of this reflection, focusing on what has been, during the past 2 years, the most visible and yet the most difficult to address form of violence, the destruction of Gaza and the massacre of its population by the Israeli army. I am grateful to this institution, which has maintained for almost 5 centuries its Latin motto inherited from Renaissance scholar Guillaume Budet, Docet Omnia, we teach everything, makes this event possible when too many others have been prohibited, cancelled, victims of censorship and self-censorship. Politics and Poetics on the Ruins of Gaza brings together scholars from various disciplines, multiple geographical horizons, working on diverse topics, who have in common a long experience of studying what has been going on in Palestine, not only in the past 2 years after the 7 October attacks, but in the past decades and even in the past long century. Their reflection is therefore indispensable to understand the present moment, to make sense of what has so often been hidden or distorted by official discourses and most media, but perhaps even more, what remains so challenging to consider with regard to the level of brutalization exerted by the military in Gaza and to the significance of the world's renunciation of what has long been presented as the foundations of its political and moral order. Le temps est proche où ce qui sut demeurer inexplicable pourra seul nous requérir, wrote the French poet René Char. The time is near when only that which remained inexplicable will demand our attention. We are indeed in that time when the inexplicable does demand our attention. The time has come, then, to confront the reality of the unleashing of violence against Palestinians and of the abdication of ethical values and legal obligations by most Western countries. To do so, I have convened an unusual combination of social scientists and literary scholars, persuaded that we need both the expertise of law, anthropology, and political science, which can render the current situation intelligible in light of the history and the ethnography of Palestine, and the words of poets, who often provide the most compelling language to seize the experience and resistance of Palestinians. Hence, politics and poetics. But I am aware that speaking of ruins may seem somewhat inappropriate in the current context, as the term carries an aesthetic and even nostalgic dimension, which has been famously showcased by Romantic artists as well as contemporary thinkers. Ruins evokes the erosion of time, but in the Gaza Strip, and for that matter, part of the West Bank, East Jerusalem, South Lebanon, and the Golan Heights, the devastation is caused by human will and supported by political projects. It will therefore be more accurate to speak of rubble, wreckage, piles of debris, evisceration of infrastructures, remains of bodies, trenches for mass graves. Indeed, words are important. In the Middle East, the choice of correct ones has become a battlefield. Zionist intellectuals have long theorized the importance of communication techniques known as Hasbara to be used in order to modify and even invert the interpretation of facts in favor of Israel. In that regard, the naming of events of the past 2 years is a case in point. Spending a considerable budget on this operation, $4 million just for the French public, the Israeli government has been able to impose an authorized vocabulary and forbidden lexicon to refer to its military operation in Gaza. Almost all Western countries, governments, and media have thus scrupulously adopted the expression Israel-Hamas war. Yet, from the very first day after the 7 October assault, the highest political and military authorities in Israel have announced their project of, quote, erasing the Gaza Strip from the face of the earth, in the words of the vice chair of the Knesset, since, quote, the entire nation was responsible, as the president of Israel phrased it, the common expression in the public sphere being that, quote, there is no innocent. A statement clearly articulated in front of the soldiers by the prime minister when he mentioned the biblical enemy whose, quote, men and women, children and infants were to be killed. And in fact, the indiscriminate bombing of the small territory with the equivalent of 6 Hiroshimas, the destruction of most health facilities, the obstruction of humanitarian aid, and the annihilation of everything that makes life livable, have provided evidence that Israeli leaders were faithful to their pronouncement. So why use the phrase Israel-Hamas war, which seems to contradict both words and acts? There are at least 3 reasons. To legitimize the operation, presented as the mere elimination of a political and military organization designated as terrorist by the United States and the European Union, although not by the United Nations. To avoid future accusations of crimes under international law, since civilian death could be described as unavoidable collateral damage in what was to be seen as a just war, and to offer a justification to Western countries' support for what was viewed as an inalienable right to self-defense after the aggression labeled a pogrom. Symmetrically, to speak of genocide was prohibited, while numerous world experts of mass murders, including Israeli professors in Holocaust studies, notably Omer Bartov and Amos Goldberg, many international human rights organizations such as Oxfam, Amnesty, Human Rights Watch, Doctors Without Borders, as well as Israeli ones such as B'Tselem, and recently even the Independent Commission of Inquiry on the Occupied Palestinian Territories of the United Nations, have established the perpetration of a genocide by Israel under the definition of the 1948 Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide, the use of the word continues to give rise to accusation of antisemitism, not only in Israel, but also in most Western countries. The policing of language could also be illustrated by the use of terms such as hostages and prisoners, human shields and humanitarian crisis, and more. And we know that it is not just a problem of words. Through the way things are named, a certain representation of the world takes form, resulting in concrete actions, both on the killing fields to justify the carnage and outside to vindicate repression. Having dedicated my first inaugural lecture in this amphitheater a few years ago on the inequality of lives, I cannot avoid addressing this topic again as the question of Palestine, to use Edward Said's expression, forces me to think about it on new ground. Regarding the recent military interventions of the Israeli army in the Gaza Strip, figures undeniably reveal the degraded value of Palestinian lives when compared with Israeli lives. In the 2008 Operation Cast Lead, the ratio of casualties was 255 to 1 for civilians. According to the evaluation conducted by the Israeli organization B'Tselem, and in the 2014 Operation Protective Edge, it was 244 to 1, based on the study carried out by the Independent Commission of Inquiry of the United Nations. It is too early to establish similar calculation for the present Israeli military intervention in Gaza, but in light of surveys done in recent conflicts, establishing that indirect deaths were four times more numerous than direct ones, we may learn in a few years, if investigations are authorized, that the present war will have caused several hundred thousand of deaths, with a ratio close to those previously observed, but with an absolute number considerably higher. The Max Planck Institute for Demographic Research recently showed that life expectancy at birth had been cut by half in Gaza during the past 2 years. Yet, should the inquiry into the value of life be limited to this macabre arithmetic? The Palestinian poet Mourid Barghouti once wrote, "In my despair, I remember that there is life after death, but I ask, oh my God, is there life before death?" This is what a project named We Are Not Numbers, created for the children of Gaza in 2015, has tried to reclaim. Viewed from that perspective, for decades, the life of Palestinians has been rendered barely livable as pauperization, discrimination, humiliation, occupation of their land, destruction of their houses, uprooting of their trees, subjection to violence and arbitrariness, as they can be arrested without charge, incarcerated without trial, and killed with impunity, has been the common experience of many across the occupied Palestinian territories. This devaluation of the lives of the Palestinians has been met with indifference in most of the rest of the world. But after 7 October 2023, it has gone from passive to active, as the news in most media have focused, legitimately, on the suffering of families of Israeli hostages, the mobilization of their supporters, and even the communication of their government, while ignoring the grief of inhabitants of Gaza, whose entire family was exterminated, the grief of the despair of people searching for a relative in the rubble of a bombed building, the anguish of fathers incapable of finding food for their children, the affliction of mothers watching the slow death of their starving newborns, the decision of parents to inscribe on the legs of their sons and daughters their name to be able to find and bury the remnants after an attack, but also the expressions of forms of solidarity, perseverance, kindness, and even hope. Israeli voices were heard, Palestinian ones were not listened to. The uneven distribution of import in the moral economy of attention is certainly one of the most extreme, yet little acknowledged, contemporary form of inequality. Thus, after 2 years of relentless and ruthless violence, the war is over, so we are told. Following the agreement of an alleged ceasefire on 10 October and the adoption of the United States so-called peace plan by the Security Council of the United Nations on 17 November, the international public sphere has indeed entered a phase of what can be called a normalization of the situation, or more informally, business as usual. As bombs keep falling on Gaza, as families disappear under the rubble, as humanitarian aid remains elusive, as the destruction of buildings and infrastructures in parts of the strip supposed to be freed from military presence continues, none of these acts is deemed a violation of the truce in order to protect the semblance of pacification. After the genocide, recently wrote the Palestinian poet Fadi Judah. And while the Israeli army assists settlers in their assaults against shepherds and villagers in the West Bank, occupies South Lebanon and the Golan Heights, launches attacks in Beirut and Syria, no official condemnation of these breakdowns of international law has followed. In the famous dystopian novel, 1984, the slogan of the party is, "War is peace." In today's Orwellian moment, it could be reversed into, "Peace is war." The acceptance of the current situation as the new normal entirely excludes Palestinians from any claim to their present and their future. It abolishes accountability for crimes perpetrated and complicity with criminals. Even more, it is those who speak for justice who are punished, and those who violate the law who are rewarded. Thus, the United States guarantees protection for Israeli war criminals under arrest warrants issued by the International Criminal Court, but drastically penalizes its judges and prosecutors for applying the international law, whoever the criminals are. In Brother's parlance, in Big Brother's parlance, one could say, impunity is justice and fairness is crime. Beyond the absence of liability of Israel for what it did and the complete abandonment of Palestinians because of who they are, it is therefore a disquieting new world that emerges at a fast pace before our eyes. In this sense, not only is the fate of these two peoples at stake, but also our collective fate in a moment when principles are dismissed and values reversed. In Walter Benjamin's words, a moment of danger. This conference will certainly not repair the silence of French academic institutions in the face of the destruction of schools and universities and the assassination of teachers and students. It will not repair either the silencing of the French state, of critical voices, calls for compliance with international law, and pleas for a just and lasting peace. But I hope that it will shed some light on a recent past that cannot be understood without having in mind a longer journey, however troubling and dismaying it may be. The time has come, then, to face facts that have often been elided, and to have what Michel Foucault called in the last lectures he delivered in this very institution, the courage of truth. I'm grateful to Leila Seurat, a political sociologist of the Arab Center for Research and Policy Studies in Paris, and Marwan Rached, a philologist, professor of Greek and Arab philosophy at the Sorbonne, for having accepted to chair the two sessions of this conference. I do not want to step on their feet by introducing the speakers, but I will simply say that my pleasure to have on the first panel, politics, Professor Nadira Chaloub-Kevorkian, currently at Princeton University, Professor Daryl Lee from the University of Chicago, Professor Nadia Abou-El-Hadj from Columbia University, and Professor Niamh Gordon from Queen Mary University of London. And on the second panel, poetics, Professor Huda Fakhreddine from the University of Pennsylvania, Professor Diana Allen from McGill University, the writer Isabella Hamad, and the poet Mahmoud Al-Shaer. They are friends I cherish, scholars and authors I admire. Unfortunately, Mahmoud, who will speak last, will not be physically present. Having lived through the 2 years of the war on Gaza, he had his house and the center he had created destroyed. Being a laureate of the French program POSE for scientists and artists at risk. He should have been a poet in residence on my chair at the Collège de France for the past 6 months, but the French government has interrupted the evacuation of all laureates. Fortunately, Mahmoud has been able to leave Gaza 2 months ago thanks to the humanitarian program of the Spanish government. He is currently in Bilbao with his wife and their young daughter, still waiting for a visa to come to Paris. He's now with us online. Thank you.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.